And welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, Classical KC turns 1 year old. Join us for that conversation with station head Stephen Steigman. When you turn on the news these days, there simply is no escaping it. Not only is climate change on its way, it's very much already here. As we see heat waves around the country unlike anything we've seen in our lifetimes, and other extreme weather events to boot, it has already made a significant impact on lives around the world. So the majority of us know that this is a real problem, but something you might not have considered is that it has the potential to become a workers' rights issue as well. You might as well be saying to yourself, how can that be? Well, let's talk about it. Joining us now is Rachel Jefferson. She's executive director of the Groundwork Northeast Revitalization Group in Kansas City, Kansas. Rachel, it's so good to have you. Good morning. She'll be just here in just a second. Rachel Mislivy is also here. She's the assistant director of the Climate and Energy Project. Rachel, good to have you.
Thanks for having me here. I'm excited to be here.
So, Rachel Mislivy, introduce us to this idea of climate change as a workers' rights issue. What are we talking about here?
Well, in Kansas, we know anywhere, we know that climate disruption is going to impact basically all aspect of life. But there will be some people who are on the front lines of that. And as far as workers, that's going to be farmers, ranchers, construction, utility workers, manufacturing workers, first responders, military personnel. As well as, in general, marginalized communities will be impacted first and worst. But for workers, especially people who are going to be experiencing the extreme heat and extreme cold also, but in Kansas, more the extreme heat, that's definitely going to be impacting people's health more and more as the climate continues to change.
So, Rachel Jefferson, we're basically talking about mainly about people who work outside. They're the folks who are going to be impacted the most here.
Well, yes, as Rachel said, there are going to be people that are outside that are impacted the most. But then also, you have to think about those inside people like factory workers who may have poor ventilation in their working conditions or a lack of adequate cooling systems in addition to those frontline outside workers.
And Rachel Jefferson, some of the specific issues that workers might face, what are we talking about here? What are among the smorgasbord of concerns that you're worried about?
Right. So, we're talking about increased heat and air pollution as well for those outdoor workers. As you're experiencing those extreme temperatures, you're going to see worse air pollution happen over time. Again, poor ventilation, lack of cooling systems to kind of mitigate some of that bad air. You can also see an increase in infectious disease as well as you see more waterborne or foodborne pathogens, and you just start to see them move to different places. Also, you'll see like increased insect populations, so that can mean more exposure to disease from mosquitoes as well.
You know, Rachel Mislivy, I think a lot of folks haven't sort of tied these two ideas together, the idea of climate change and the idea of workers' rights. This is a new thought for a lot of people. Do you find that a lot in your work as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would think taking it just a little bit further, that even the connection between climate change and public health is definitely new for people. But it really can change people's approach to climate change when you can connect it to their lives. So if climate change becomes a thing that I see how it's impacting my life and the life of my community or my family. And also, you know, when you're talking about workers' rights, you know, taking that to the people, again, who are going to be more on the front lines of that and how the health impacts are going to be significantly worse for them. Then I think it really changes the way people see climate change from a divisive issue to something, you know, we really need to take action on now.
Yeah, it changes my view of it. Yeah, I think that's for sure. Rachel Jefferson, I've seen stats that suggest that between 1992 and 2017, more than 800 workers in this country were killed as a result of heat stress issues and more than 70,000 injured. How accurate are those numbers? Because some experts say they're probably a whole lot higher than that.
You know, I can't speak to the accuracy of those numbers at this time, but what I can say is there definitely is more research and investigation that is needed into this issue in terms of intersections between health, adequate housing, social supports, and workers. So, you know, I think that having more research done, working with communities, identifying those vulnerable populations as well is what what's going to actually lead to better policy to protect workers.
Rachel Mislivy, you read sometimes about workers in farm fields who work 10, 12, 14-hour days. Can you shed any more light on the number of folks who have died as a result of heat stress issues out there?
I can give you some numbers from the Kansas Health Institute that isn't specific to workers, but it's to the heat-related illness in Kansas over time. And that would be, so there was hospitalizations from heat-related illness in 2004 were only 57 compared to 2011, which is 180. That's still 10 years ago. So, you know, I don't have the most updated numbers. Sometimes those numbers are delayed. And that's also compared to, you know, deaths from heat-related illness. In 2002, 4 and 10, there were only 5. In 2011, there were 37. But I would add, so that's, you know, heat-related illness and death.
And the
Kansas
trend is very clear. You're saying the numbers are clearly going up.
Absolutely. The numbers are going up. But I think what's important to note here, as I think Rachel Jefferson was alluding to a little bit, is it's also hard to pull out, like, this was just heat-related, because you can have, heat-related, if there's increased ground level ozone or smog, and which warmer temperatures add to that, that also puts, more pressure on asthma and puts people at a greater risk of like bronchitis or emphysema and things like that. So there could be somebody who got very, very sick with an asthma attack that was triggered by the heat. And it's not necessarily going to be marked that that was a heat related illness, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And what about farm workers, Rachel Mislivy? I mean, the path forward for them would be what? I know of at least one farm worker in Oregon who died in the recent heat wave up there. What do you know about that?
Well, I know that there's legislation that's been put forward that would require OSHA to create and enforce standards to protect workers in extreme temperatures. And that's called the Asunción Valdivia Heat Illness and Fatality Protection Act. It might be named for the person you're speaking about, but it would require OSHA to establish measures like paid breaks in cool areas and make sure people have access to water, limitations on time in the heat, and emergency response for illnesses caused by the heat. It would also require training for employees on how to recognize the potential risk factors of working in heat and how to recognize the symptoms even. I think people don't always recognize what it looks like when you're having a response to heat-related extremes.
So, Rachel Mislivy, you're saying that this problem has gotten so dramatic that even Congress is aware of it and is weighing in here.
Yes.
Yeah. How significant is the legislation you just described to me?
I can't speak to that right now. I know it's been introduced, but I couldn't tell you exactly how far along it's gone.
And are you happy with it? Or does it go far enough, or does it need to be a lot more aggressive?
I think everything with climate policy needs to be more aggressive because it's going faster than we're responding to it. And the human cost is great. And again, it's happening now, and we need to be taking action now in basically every sector in every way we can. So while this is a good start, and I'm really glad they're talking about it, I would say pretty much nothing is going as far as it needs to be going right now.
Rachel Mislivy, one more thing I want to get you before I go back to Rachel Jefferson here. I've heard that some unions are now inserting clauses into workplace contracts, even for employees who work indoors. You know, those clauses can say that workers who toil away in places where the temperature is, you know, say above 85 degrees, deserve extra time off. Is this becoming more common?
I can't speak to how common that is but I know that unions are trying to address these issues. And I know that the climate movement is trying to bridge relationships with the labor movement. Those connections are going to be really important as we go forward. I would also point out that the Frito-Lay workers who are striking in Topeka reference being required to work in over 100 degree warehouse with no air conditioning. And like Rachel mentioned earlier, you know, there's heat-related illness with that. There's also, risk of if there's a flood and then mold develops in that space. And then, you know, you could have illnesses related to that, which can not just be heat stroke or what have you, but would also be, you know, maybe really bad asthma attacks or respiratory symptoms that are caused by that stagnant, stale air that's then, you know, really, really, really hot, and there's no escape from it. So you can't, if it's not air conditioned, you can't even walk outside and get a respite from the heat.
What does the Frito-Lay plant say about this?
I'm not going to make a comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. Rachel Jefferson, what do you know about the impact of unions on all this?
Yeah, that's a great point, because up until recently, there's been this very large tension between the unions, jobs, and the environment, right? Like, you can't have both. You can't have a good economy with jobs.
That's
and you can't
the argument,
have a
good right?
environment. And that's actually very false. You can have both. So this new joint work that we're seeing between the climate movement activists and the labor unions is actually very critical to moving us forward and making some changes, because in the end, those workers are also frontline. So if you think about the truckers, right, who are trucking all over, they're the ones who are first exposed to the impacts from diesel health pollution. And so highlighting things like that, highlighting those connections is going to be helpful in drafting legislation that's actually going to be effective across the board. And I would also just say, in terms of legislation, yes, it should be more aggressive. Also, it should be more expansive. And it should be drafted in conjunction with the frontline communities, the people who are experiencing the greatest impacts.
Well, what's holding that back? Is it just this psychological barrier, Rachel Jefferson, that you're alluding to here? This idea that so many people believe that you can't create more jobs if you're concerned about the environment?
I think it is that false narrative, as well as just kind of ostrich head in the sand. Is this even really happening? And I think that more and more people are starting to see that this is happening. And as Rachel alluded, they're starting to see how it impacts them. They're experiencing it, right? We're seeing greater wildfires. We're seeing these extreme weather events, and we're seeing longer, hotter fire seasons. So as that starts to happen, more and more people are becoming aware and comfortable with this idea of, wow, the world is burning. but at the same time, things aren't moving fast enough. People still don't have the adequate health care that they should have had anyway. Hmm. And so we just need to really pick up the pace on this.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about climate change as a workers' rights issue and what's being done to address it. Congress now weighing in. You can weigh in right now, too, with your questions, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. So how do you overcome this false narrative, to use your words, Rachel Jefferson, that you can't create more jobs if you're concerned about climate change?
I think it's for me and all my work, it's always about the grassroots. It's always about the people and the people power, right? So if you're working in community, then you know that there's a great need for more education and awareness at the community level. Just being exposed to what climate risk means, say, in Kansas City, Kansas, or in Kansas City, Missouri, what you can do, how you can protect yourself, and how you can be ready. And the more that we have that type of social movement around climate change, making a disaster plan with your family, talking to your neighbors about it, the more that people are going to start to say, you know what, I'm going to exercise my civic right to advocate for better policy. And then on the other side, you need those grass top leaders who are willing to reach out and work with communities to, like I said, draft legislation and really move us to a more just transition framework.
Okay, Rachel Jefferson, tell me a little bit more about your work with the Groundwork Northeast Revitalization Group. You're based in Kansas City, Kansas. What are you working on? What are you doing?
Oh, we have a slew of projects, actually. But the one that I think is most relevant to this conversation is we actually do offer a bite-sized, easy-to-digest climate and disaster preparedness training that is tailored to Kansas City, Kansas. It's an hour-long training. It's now in English and in Spanish. And a participant who participates in that training receives a 72-hour disaster kit that can support two people. So it's something that we're actively working on. I think we've already trained close to 100 residents. We want to train more, and that kit is completely free. And again, it's one of the first steps to raising that awareness. We're also going to be working with our national Groundwork USA partners to hire a climate safe neighborhoods coordinator who for 3 years is going to be doing on the ground organizing around heat mapping and heat island effects in Kansas City, Kansas as well. So that's some of the work that we're doing, as well as our green team is actively working on building in green infrastructure, tree planting, and through a community-based participatory research process, educating residents about the benefits of that, as well as stormwater, because flooding is an issue here, as well as extreme heat because of our poor stormwater systems and our deteriorating infrastructure.
We want to know how climate change is affecting you at your workplace. place. Our phone number, 816-235-2888 is our number, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Rachel, Ms. Livy, you know, to what extent are workers in a position these days even to demand change and to address these issues? How much clout do you have? What are you seeing across the country? What are you seeing in Kansas?
Well, I would just emphasize again what Rachel Jefferson said, that it's an issue that affects all of us and that we need to be engaged to bring about these changes. So, whether it's workers or parents or whoever you're talking about, climate change impacts all of us. And we have a government people are elected to represent us. And so if we use our voices and we engage in the process and civic participation, we should be able to change the outcome of climate change. We should be able to engage to push forward solutions that work for our neighborhoods and our communities. And I want to just absolutely amplify what Rachel and Groundworks are doing, that focusing on what works locally and what the issues are locally and giving people the tools and the community to respond is absolutely critical. And then I would say you take that base that she's building there, and you engage those people also with their elected officials to try to push forward policies that really protect all of us.
You know, Rachel Jefferson, are workers you talk to, are they feeling empowered to go to management and say, we've got to make some changes here because my work environment is simply too hot, it's unacceptable?
I think more and more you see people standing up for what they believe is right. But I mean, in the end, we all have to be able to put bread on the table. And that's a horrible thing to not be able to advocate for yourself because you're afraid that you're going to lose your job. Just as it's a horrible thing to not be able to advocate for yourself because you're afraid you're going to lose your house. Mm-hmm. So I think more and more you're seeing that. But corporations are powerful and they'll make you pay if you're too squeaky of a wheel. Steve, I did want to say something else. Yeah. We're talking about in Kansas and across the nation, but I also want to mention that this is a global issue. And in terms of a global issue, these countries that are low and moderate income countries or tropical areas are actually also going to be greatly impacted by the climate change. And so thinking about all of us, we do have to think about it in terms of our whole earth and everybody who lives on it. And they actually have, poor emergency response systems than we do. And so that's also a topic to be thinking about in terms of, yes, we're experiencing it here, but someone somewhere else is probably experiencing it worse and faster than we are.
Okay, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. You can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Rachel, Ms. Livy, you see air monitoring as a way to help see the effects of climate change on people working outdoors. What is that and why would it help?
Well, air monitoring is just like what it sounds like. You put out stations to determine what the pollution is in the air. And I know in Kansas City, one of our partners, Clean Air Now, they do trainings. They get people together to do that kind of air monitoring. So it gives the community the power to know what's in the air that they're breathing and how those contaminants might be hurting them. And then also what they can do to potentially change the environment to make the air cleaner and healthier for everybody.
Hmm. You know, and more broadly, Rachel Jefferson, we're looking at this right now through the lens of a worker, but public health in general is a serious concern tied to climate change. Am I seeing that correctly here?
I think you are. And yeah. I think that if we think that's, I mean, and what we've been trying to talk about in this whole conversation are these intersections. Nothing stands alone. And so public health, housing, rights, civil rights, all that falls into each other. And honestly, those populations that are impacted by this are also the populations who are most affected by those other social and cultural issues.
You know, we've seen with the coronavirus, Rachel, Ms. Livy, how a public health issue can shed light on the systemic inequities present in our society. Do you think climate change has the potential to act the same way?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And kind of to add on to the question you asked, Rachel, for years, climate change was seen as like an environmentalist issue. And the people you heard talking about climate change were scientists and, environmentalist types. And in the past probably 5 or 6 years, climate change is really becoming more and more a public health concern, such that you know, organizations like the American Public Health Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, Lung Association, Health Association, all of the big, you know, very trusted public health organizations are taking a stand on climate change as what they say is one of the greatest health threats, you know, of our time. And to me, that's really encouraging because, again, I think, you know, you're talking about how do we bring in workers and do workers want to advocate for this? And Rachel's talking about, you know, frontline communities and how things are going to be impacting them most. If you can connect it to public health and then you also get the doctors and the nurses behind those people saying, this is a problem. This is a huge problem. It's going to be, you know, transformative in negative ways, but we can make it better. You know, then I think that you really get a stronger push for solutions that work, as opposed to, you know, before when it was really seen as like an environmental issue. And when you're asking about how that, you know, mirrors to COVID, it's going to be very similar. The people who are going to be the most impacted by climate change are the same that have been the most impacted by COVID.
You know, it just seems to me, Rachel Jefferson, that for so many years, climate change has been this idea, this nebulous idea that's been out in the universe and people talk about it and don't really pay a whole lot of attention to it. But this conversation sort of changes that to me. We're talking about workers in the heat struggling to stay healthy as they do their jobs. This stuff is really coming home to roost in a very real way now for people, maybe in ways that it hasn't until now.
I completely agree with you. And so what I always want to encourage is thoughtful urgency, because in the end, the human response to climate change may also have negative impacts as we're looking at renewable energies and carbon sequestering. What is the fallout going to be from those, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we're so quick to say we need a solution right now, we don't fully think through the short and long-term implications of those solutions. So I just want to kind of put a caution out there as well. Thoughtful urgency is what is needed, and you get that by working with community members, those frontline community members, working with the doctors, working with the scientists, not in extractive ways, but in inclusive and thoughtful ways to create the change that we all need.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, are people coming to you, or are you still having to go out to people and say, you know, have you noticed this climate change stuff is getting to be a serious problem? Are you concerned about it? Right. How is it working in your world every day?
I do see it trending more in just general conversations, porch conversations, when you're having a, you know, happy hour drink with people. It's like, oh, it's really, and then you kind of bring those ties. We are still having to do a lot of work in terms of saying, this is how it's personally affecting you right now, helping people draw those connections. But they're aware. Right. They're aware that
something's not different.
Right. Something's different. Something's happening. My child has asthma. But then it's like, oh, my child has asthma. I live right next to the intermodal rail yard and I-70 and it's hot, you know. And so when you start to bring those things together for people, they're like, oh, yeah, I get it.
That's what the issue is.
Right.
That's what this climate change stuff is
right.
all about.
Right.
Rachel Mislivy, you finding the same thing in the work that you do?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been doing this kind of work for the last 20 years. And I would say, you know, you were asking if people, you know, are coming up to me and saying, hey, is this climate change? And, you know, I think what we see more is when we go out and do public education events, you know, we work statewide. So we reach all corners of the state. In situations where, you know, previously some, you know, there might have been resistance or hesitation to the topic. It's amazing how rapidly those like feelings can change when you connect it to public health. So if you say to people, you know, who in this room, you know, has allergies now that are, you know, worse than ever before, you know, almost everybody will raise their hand. Who in this room knows or loves somebody who has asthma? You know, and there's even things like, you know, if you're talking to people who spend a lot of time outdoors, you ask them, you know, have you noticed how much worse the tick and mosquito populations are? Oh, absolutely. You know, everybody now knows somebody who has Lyme disease or et cetera.
Rachel,
and it's all
related
to climate change.
I'm going to have to leave it there. Rachel Mislivy, Assistant Director of the Climate and Energy Project. Rachel Jefferson, she's with the Groundwork Northeast Revitalization Group. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.